Prepare to be astonished.
It's that time again.
Let's get started.
From the Clatsop County Historical Society, an adventure in history with Matt Burns and Alana Quila.
You should never be allowed to talk to people.
Some people without brains do an awful lot of talking.
And now, with today's adventure, it's Mac and Alana.
Good evening and welcome to an adventure in history. We're so glad to be here with you tonight. Or if you're listening in your car, on a podcast, I think we're becoming pretty popular on podcasts. Maybe people are binge listening, not binge watching.
Then they'll pick up all of our nuances and things that we say and repeat.
Ooh.
Or bad grammar that I use.
How many times I say,
I have to admit, I'm sure I do. But no, I did
still. Or how often we laugh at ourselves, which is pretty often.
That's true. I have had speakers that I am so distracted by that I start keeping track of whatever the word is, if they say like or something like that. Mm-hmm. And there was, I'm not going to name.
That's good.
The teacher that one of my children had, so I'm not even going to name, so you could guess whether it's elementary school, maybe even college. But I went to one of them, and I was stunned how often, like. And I was so distracted, I started jotting on the program that was in front of me how many times.
Oh, my goodness.
And my family knew what I was doing and kept, like, slapping me.
But it's because that person was surrounded by millennials who use that word all the time.
Maybe. Or maybe this was 30 years ago. And my kindergarten teacher for my oldest child.
Either way.
It wasn't.
It sticks. It sticks with you.
And I had to actually ask the child later, does that distract you in class? I didn't notice.
So no.
And I had to held up. And it was something, it was somewhere around a 5-minute talk. And it was probably 50.
Oh my goodness. Yeah.
And not just slipped in the middle of a talk. Like, you know, sometimes people do that.
Right.
So like, we're going to discuss like the future, it was that bad. Anyway, a little rant. But maybe people are noticing our things, and they're keeping little check marks.
Well, maybe they're noticing that we have lost words. We're bringing them back.
Let's bring
this one in.
Alana's lost words that she's bringing back.
Yeah. So this one is famelicose.
Ooh, I like to say famelicose.
During the summer, my children are always famelicose.
Famelicose. I'm going to say that they are free range.
Ooh.
They're running around outside.
During the summer. That's all the time, Mac. Constantly hungry.
I was going to go with something about food.
Yes. I mean, it's just like summertime, right? They just want to eat. I guess that's free range. They just want to be free range kids that eat all the time.
Eat all the time.
Sure.
That would be kind of the definition.
It is.
Instead of cage free, they have all the grass they can munch on outside. Sure.
They're good to go.
So say the word again because we want these
famelicose.
To catch on. Famelicose. All right. We like that. All right. So because we got a lot of different things to talk about.
We do.
Last week I talked about my trip to Florida, and you had a trip we're going to talk about shortly. Shall we get to the history highlights
first,
so we can clear the road for you?
Yes.
All right, so these are things that happened tomorrow, August 21st, 1841. Darn, I have to start marking these down so I can make you guess what year.
Oh.
Obviously, it's a patent, because that's kind of what I do when I say darn. 1841, John Hampton patents the Venetian blind.
Oh.
1841. That seems early to me.
That seems quite early.
Yeah, and I wonder why he calls it Venetian blind. I'll have to look
that
up.
Well, that style, I think, was popular, right?
So, 1858, Lincoln-Douglas debates begin. Okay. Now, if anybody likes politics, and not just the garbage we hear on TV, but really digging into politics, you should really read the Lincoln-Douglas debates. They're fascinating. They're funny. They would get up on a stump and talk with no notes to speak of and no teleprompter.
Right.
And not just trying to get the 10-second thing that's going to air on TV tonight. They would talk for 3-5 hours
debating
things and concepts and ideas. It's amazing. The Lincoln-Douglas debates.
And was there much conversation or was it truly a debate?
A little bit of both. Sometimes it is a back and forth immediately. And Mr. Lincoln, you've said this, and I can't believe that. Explain yourself, sir. And then he does.
Right.
You're back and forth. But sometimes it's just, I'm going to talk for an hour. And then you're going to basically talk for an hour picking apart things that I just said.
Hmm. Yeah.
But it's incredible. 1863, the Sack of Lawrence, the vicious guerrilla war in Missouri spills over into Kansas and precipitates one of the most appalling acts of violence during the war when 150 men in the abolitionist town of Lawrence, Kansas, are murdered by a raid of Southern partisans. Mm-hmm. And I hate the use of Southern partisans here because it's Quantrill and his raiders, and they're horrible. They are vicious, vicious killers.
Yeah.
Now, yes, officially they are on the side of the South, but they are kind of independent contractors that are just going out there doing their thing.
Okay.
And basically they line up all the men in Lawrence and they kill them all and then they burn the town down. And it's pretty amazing.
Awful.
Yeah, it is pretty awful. And I had a whole bunch of stuff, but we're not going to read that. 1878, the American Bar Association organizes at Sarasota, New York.
Oh, I didn't know that.
I wonder if that's supposed to be Saratoga.
Oh, okay.
That might be a typo.
Yes.
I don't know if there is a Sarasota, New York.
Saratoga sounds more like it.
All right. So don't lose all your money on Jeopardy on that one. 1888, American inventor William Seward Burroughs patents the adding machine.
Oh.
The Burroughs adding machine. That's world famous.
I love that.
1920, Daphne Milne, wife of writer A.A. Milne, gives birth to a son who the couple named Christopher Robin Milne on August 21st, 1920, and Christopher Robin will be immortalized in A. Milne's books, Winnie the Pooh and the House on the Pooh Corner.
Aww.
So they had a son, Christopher Robin.
I love that.
For real. 1959, Hawaii becomes the 50th state.
Welcome to the party.
I wonder if we, well, is it true, like, if you fly to Hawaii, do they greet you with leis, or am I just, like, Brady Bunching here?
When I was on Hawaiian Airlines, yes. And you also get like Hawaiian juice cocktails in the airplane.
Wow.
And the food's better.
I wonder if we did that for Hawaii when they joined the party.
Oh, yeah. Probably not.
1969, the first Gap clothing store opens.
Right.
Ocean Avenue, San Francisco.
What year?
1969.
Okay.
The Gap. I worked at the Gap for one day when I was in high school.
That makes sense.
They hired me to have a clicker and count how many people were coming. It was in a mall. How many people were coming in and out of the store. And I remember feeling badly because the manager, who's probably all of 22 years old, explained it to me and then asked if I understood what the job was. I said, I think it's pretty self-explanatory. Aww. Click, 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 click. Two people, click, click. Anyway, then after the first day, they decided they had enough information. They didn't need it
anymore.
That
was it.
Yeah.
They're like, this is ridiculous.
So my one-day career at the Gap. 1980, PETA is founded. The People for the Ethical Treatment of Animals is founded.
I saw that one.
So yeah. We do need to report that in the making of this radio broadcast, no animals were harmed or used.
Or eaten. Nope.
Or eaten.
And it all started, I was reading a little bit on that, the wife, because it's a partnership, a couple, it started because she picked up some stray cats, and took them to a shelter in New York where she lived. And the shelter's conditions were so terrible, which I can imagine, right, at the time. She kept the cats and then started doing a little bit more research. So she and her husband at the time were in college, so they then dedicated their education and further research and into looking into cruelty animal practices.
It's interesting, 1980. So I wonder at what point did it become like, hey, you can't eat anything.
Right. I was thinking that it was, I really did like that, just that little initial story, because it was very pure and they really did have a purpose. And there was certainly a need, too, to sort of out some large-scale practices that were going on that people didn't know about that weren't humane, right? I mean, so.
I remember one of the protests, and maybe protests is just an angry letter and we do not approve of this, but in the movie Shawshank Redemption, he gets like a horrible bug thing in his food prison, and then the old guy that has the bird says, you're going to eat that? And he hands it to him, and the bird eats it. And this was mistreating of the worm or whatever the heck it was.
Yeah.
Maggot.
Right.
It was a maggot. That's what it was. Okay. It was a maggot. And PETA wrote a letter, somehow complained about this.
It's a much larger organization now. Yes.
All right, but our history highlight of the day, I think had the most impact on history. 1831, Nat Turner launches a massive insurrection in Virginia of a slave revolt.
Nice, yeah.
And this puts the fear, 1831, that all of these African-American slaves were suddenly, I mean, they vastly outnumbered the white people in the South.
Right.
And I think that kind of scared everybody into thinking, oh no, what if they did organize and decided we're not going to be slaves anymore? And it caused a lot of repercussions, a lot of harsh treatments, and a lot of making sure they could not organize, they could not try to revolt, and just set the stage for a lot of ugliness.
Bad things.
Yeah. So that's our history holiday today.
Yeah. So our transition, because you and I were talking about this, I recently returned from a trip with my 8-year-old daughter, and we went to the Hermitage in Nashville. And the Hermitage is Andrew Jackson's family home, and it's the home where he ended up, where he lived, and then he died in that home as well, along with his family.
So I do have to give a little side note.
Yes.
You texted me a picture.
I did. Yes.
And you said, can you guess what president's home I'm visiting? And it was kind of a close-up photo. And if I loved Andrew Jackson, I might have recognized it. But then you added to my confusion.
I did.
You said it's one of your favorite presidents. I did. So you tricked me.
Well, I wasn't. Yes.
And then
I was wrong.
And then I had to say, I don't know.
Yes. And then you're like, he's a horrible. He's a horrible
president.
And you
wrote Andrew Jackson.
and he is a horrible man, truly. So the premise, though, of visiting this home, because we were in Nashville with one of my girlfriends who is an archivist for museums. She's worked at lots of museums around the country, and she lives in Texas now, but she's from Nashville. So this was a home that she wanted to go to because she knows a lot about the history there. Mm-hmm. And they had a newer exhibit there that was explaining about the enslaved people who lived at the Hermitage. And it was, again, it was fairly new. And she wanted to go and bring my 8-year-old daughter with us. So leading up to it, we have to explain to my 8-year-old what slavery is. So
how do you have that discussion?
Well, I didn't for the most part. I will give most of the credit, if not all, to my friend Jan, who, you know, started just very simply about this awful part of our history and that we have to talk about it because it is so cruel and so horrible. And it is true. And she's, again, as an archivist and a historian like you are, she says, we rely on the written documents, so what we have, the information that we have, and in the pictures, because there's lots of photos too, and she says we have to preserve that to learn about this history. So we go to the Hermitage, and the big thing is the house. You know, you pay ahead of time, and you're going to go to the house, and then they ask you if you'd like a special tour, and it's the tour of the enslaved area.
And that's the way they word it.
And it's an additional fee.
Interesting.
It's extra money.
Okay.
Which I felt it annoyed me,
yeah,
right?
I don't like that.
So you have to pay extra to learn about the cruelty of this man and also his whole family. And so we did. We paid the $15 extra per person to do it.
Wow. Including the 8-year-old.
Including the 8-year-old. And it was on a horse-drawn little wagon. Mm-hmm. And we had a tour guide. So that was the part that we wanted. We wanted the tour guide to give us that. And it was a huge campus. So also because we were in very hot weather, it was probably like 85 degrees, 80% humidity. It sounded great to be on something versus walking a mile away. But, you know, all of this is very, you know, we're just kind of watching Carly and listening. She's hearing about the true details, which were awful, very accurate, and very detailed about the things that happened. And so there's probably like 8 of us in this wagon. And so the woman says, so all 8 of you would have lived in, because you could see where their homes were. She said, you would have lived in half of that space. And there, you can actually see the outline of the home. So the home isn't there anymore, but the bases. She said, all of you, whether you were related or not, would have lived in that.
And
half
that space
of that.
Is smaller than Carly's room at home, I bet.
Right. And it was smaller than the wagon that we were sitting in, right, that we were very cramped on. And we keep going, and we keep going, and you don't have to go very far, but it just gets hotter and hotter. And she talks about the chores and the work that they're having to do and when they're having to do it and that they're having to do it every day and that there aren't weekends and that children, young children even, are forced to do this work as well. So again, you know, my daughter's eyes are just getting bigger and bigger, and she's a very emotional child, so she's taking it all in. She didn't ask any questions.
And at this point, is she aware we're talking about Black people, African Americans,
yes.
and white people?
Oh,
not
yes.
just some people are slaves.
Nope. And it was especially the enslaved people. And enslaved is a new term for the South. That's mm-hmm. that's something they're not referring to people as slaves. Mm-hmm. That's a noun, right? Where that's not a people, but they were actually being held hostages. So the word enslaved is used. Mm-hmm. And that was used over and over and over again. And it's of only African-American people mm-hmm. in the South. And that African-American people, at least during this time period, had absolutely no rights. They couldn't do anything that they wanted. And there were no such thing as a nice slave owner. Because that was not a question that was asked on the tour. But somebody did say, did this man have any good traits? That was asked. And basically, the tour guide said no. He really didn't. He was known for a lot of powerful decisions and a lot of powerful things that happened, right? He was credited with a lot of things that occurred. And so that's why he is very well known and had lots of money and owned all of these people. But no, he was not a nice person, and neither was his wife either, we learned. So it was tough, because I want to say too, so we did all that, and then we went through the home, and the home, everything's so different, right? So the home, for one, you walk inside and it's air conditioned.
it was not air conditioned back in the time. They do point out
that it wasn't. But you know, I mean, all of a sudden you just feel like you're in a different place, right? Yes. So we did the enslaved tour first, then the home. And you know, they have these beautiful things, and even the kids have toys and just a beautiful, like, large space. And it's not massive by any means, but it certainly was big for that time period. And you end up going back towards a museum, and in the museum they have pictures of some of the enslaved folks. And so the one that had the most impact on my daughter was this woman named Hannah. And of course, one of the reasons is Carly's best friend is named Hannah. So she, you know, that just, like, touched very close to home. And this woman just was old and very frail. It was not a glamour photo by any means, but this woman also had lived a terrible life of being enslaved her entire life. And so they're talking about this woman, my friend Jan, and she says, yeah, she escaped and then told her story. And so that's why there was so much information and documentation about this one woman who lived into her 90s, mm-hmm. which was also pointed out, something that didn't happen very often, right, with enslaved people, because they were working so hard. So Carly was just, you know, she's like, that's how she got away. She had to escape. And she didn't get to escape with anybody else. And she had other family members that were still on the property. So later that night, she was in tears and sobbing and very, you know, very sad. But I felt, you know, it was all the appropriate things too, mm-hmm. right? I mean, if she hadn't been sad or hadn't been aghast at all of these things. But the lastly, I'll point out, in that museum part, they had an exhibit that said, what did you learn today? And then it's post-it notes. Mm-hmm. And the whole exhibit, it's a wall, just one wall, and it's just filled top to bottom with post-it notes. And Carly's post-it note wrote, I learned about slavery.
And that was it.
And that was it. Oh, and she didn't want to sign her name, because she said that she felt...
And you just outed her.
I did. But she did write age 8. So okay. that others, too, could see that, you know, we do have to tell this next generation, right? We have to share these atrocities that existed.
See, and let me ask you this, since this is often in the news these days about how we educate our children about very difficult subjects.
Yeah.
The Holocaust, slavery, Native American mm-hmm. genocide, or stealing the land. Did she feel like a horrible person? Did this story, because she is white, make her feel guilt of some kind? I mean, did she feel badly, or did she feel badly that this happened?
She did not feel guilty. That's an interesting question. I hadn't even thought about that. You know, her question, though, to Jan was, she says, so if I lived then and I didn't want to have slaves, what would I have done? And Jan talked to her about things mm-hmm. that she could have done. And it also would have, Jan really pointed out, it really would have depended on where you lived, mm-hmm. right? So if you were here in Nashville, you know, that didn't exist, and that created, led to a war. But yes, so she did learn that there were things that she could have done. And I think, personally, I think information is key. I'd rather my daughter have all the information mm-hmm. and then be able to use critical thinking skills and learn about it and feel bad about it. There's nothing wrong with feeling horrible about it.
And and we should.
Right.
But that shouldn't make Carly at age 8 feel guilty. And I'm very mature. I mean, I know your kid is very smart and very charming. But at age 8, that's a very amazing question.
Right.
That she's not saying, wow, white people are horrible.
Right.
Andrew Jackson was horrible.
Right.
Many people in the time period were horrible. Mm-hmm. And it's an interesting thing to put her at age 8 in her mind, would I have been horrible?
Right.
Would I have done this? And that's a great question.
Or what would I have done?
And you know, it is easy, especially in our modern sense, to say I never would have done A, B, or C and mm-hmm. whatever horrible thing we're talking about from the time period. But we don't know. We really don't know.
Right.
Because we are the combined experiences of all these things and that knowledge. And you don't know what you would have done. And pick a time period and pick a part of the globe.
Right.
Depending where you were born and what time, you don't know what you personally would do. We hope we'd be better people.
Right.
And I think a lot of us would. But if we weren't raised to know this was horrible,
then you wouldn't know it. Then you,
I don't
right?
know. So you know, I love that question.
One thing, another thing she noticed too, because Andrew Jackson is very popular, and of course we went to his home, right? That's what we were visiting. But then in Nashville, a lot of places that we went had memorials or busts or pictures or portraits of Andrew Jackson. In a lot of places.
Interesting. And well, so, he's still on her $20
bills. And so, you know, she had this information early in the trip, and so she learned that this is really, you know, he was influential. Yes, we got that. Mm-hmm. But he was not a good person. So, mm-hmm. you know, that was sort of hard, I think, too, to separate the two, because I think a lot of the mm-hmm. celebration of him that we saw is about him being so powerful. And
yes.
And whereas I can agree he had influence, mm-hmm. But he did not, you know, the influence was not great.
Yeah.
So.
Interesting. So did your friend, the archivist, how did she feel about the presentation and the message and how it was presented?
She loved it. She thought it was great. She thought it was very well presented. She too did have issue with the cost. So you are limiting your audience, especially at $15. So we already paid an admission fee of like $30 or something, or $35. Yeah. And then for that additional, just to get that information.
Yeah.
So you could walk out to the enslaved area, but there's no information out there. So you mm-hmm. wouldn't have found it. You wouldn't have heard the numbers, the stories, what happened, mm-hmm. Or the cruelty and all of those details. Mm-hmm. So
I hate the doubling down. That's how I'm always annoyed at zoos.
Right.
Or
sport. An add-on, right?
Yeah, that you don't need to charge me this extra amount. The only place I've never felt ripped off, I have to admit, was the Evergreen.
Aviation.
Aviation. I paid the extra to actually go into.
Oh, you've said this.
And sit in the cockpit of the Spruce Goose. But I kind of feel like that didn't. If I hadn't done that, I would still appreciate the story of the Spruce Goose and understand the history of it. So I didn't feel.
But that's like, more of a fun one.
Yeah.
I mean, whereas this is like.
It's
I mean,
part of your mission as that site. You should. That's the story you need to be telling, and to charge an extra doubling down is not appropriate, in my opinion.
I agree.
And it is easy for me to say without looking at their budget and their needs and what their issues are.
And again, it's fairly new. So she said that's a new part of their exhibit. And again, the South is not Oregon. It's different. So.
Well, neat.
They're getting
incredible.
There. Yes.
And good for Carly for asking good questions.
Yes.
So we've just got a little bit of time, but we do have a whole bunch of local This Day in Histories.
Okay.
And we just kind of pick some at random here. Let's see. Well, I could have picked the ones on the first page, but I think there's ones that I like more on the... Oh, here we go. August 22nd, 1905. For the first time in Astoria, Professor Vinter F. Cooper, the eminent blind phrenologist, will deliver his famous lecture, Crime and Its Causes, in his large tent at the corner of 9th and Duane Street. Professor Cooper needs no introduction to the Astoria public, as his work in past years throughout the Pacific Coast has placed him in the front rank as a lecturer on this most scientific subject.
Phrenology. Scammer.
Phrenology, reading the bumps on your head.
Professor, I like how he just a assigns himself that. So August 22nd, 1931, Clatsop County is being combed by contractors interested in the matter of obtaining rock for the proposed repairs of the South Jetty at the mouth of the Columbia River. Representatives from six contracting companies were in the city searching for suitable rock. The rock must be of certain specific gravity without iron content of a type that will break into chunks averaging 9 tons in size. And that was the last time they fixed the jetty, right?
Maybe. Okay, this is one of my favorites too.
Never ending.
And this one, you know, these are things from the newspaper.
Yes.
But I like reading it a certain way. August 24th, 1895, the Regatta of Astoria, which lasted 3 days, was a grand success, barring the unfortunate fatal accident that occurred on its first day. These annual regattas at Astoria attract a large number of people and are annually growing in interest. They just bury in the middle of it that somebody died.
Buried the lead.
These are great.
I mean, somebody needed to tell them that that's a separate story.
The unfortunate fatal accident that occurred on the first day.
Oh my gosh, how awful. Let's see. August 24th, 1922, a party including Dr. Arthur Van Dusen, Abel Wright, and Barney Sovey, well-equipped with light artillery of the scattergun type, left yesterday afternoon by automobile for the Nehalem Valley, where they hunted the elusive grouse and native pheasants. We say hunted advisedly, for aside from a single skinny grouse, which Abel Wright claims he shot, the party of three returned home today empty-handed after spending the night at Birkenfeld. Sovey and Dr. Van Dusen both say they got a shot at a flock of birds during the morning, but admit that their combined barrage failed to so much as a ruffle their feathers. So an entire article about these poor men that caught nothing.
Yes.
That's terrible.
You got nothing. August 26, 1891. Thomason, that's an unfortunate name. Thomas Thomason claims that on the 6th of last June, while in a saloon here, alcohol was poured on his shoes and set fire to, severely burning his feet. He was yesterday taken by Chief of Police Barry to L.K. Adams, prosecuting attorney, and today at 10 o'clock will be on hand to make complaint. Such cruelty, as he alleges, should not be allowed to go unpunished, and if the facts are as he states, penalty should be dealt.
Yes. August 26, 1931. Horse gets revenge on motor foe. Here is a story of a horse's revenge on the motor car, which has been driving its kind towards extinction. Charles Escala, a local realty dealer, drove some prospective land purchasers to view a Lewis and Clark District ranch last evening and left his car in a field where an aged white horse was browsing while he and his party inspected the land on foot. It was dark when they reached the car again, and the old white horse was standing by the car. The horse had chewed a dozen or more holes through the car top and ripped off large pieces of the interior. Don't leave your car windows open.
That's right.
that sounds like a nice car.
Good word to the wise. Okay, and we got one last one here. August 21st, 1933.
Ooh.
Phantom evades searching party. Tillamook Head. Whether it is Alley-Oop, Tarzan, or that half-human salesman Sam that is out inhabiting the wilds of Tillamook Head has not yet been determined. Although a small searching party headed by Clement Clink went out early Sunday morning and over the head of numerous independent parties of summer residents ventured over the trail, no further trace has been found as far as is known. Nevertheless, the Phantom of Tillamook Head continues to be the main topic of conversation in the environs of Seaside. General opinions leans to the view that another solitude-seeking hermit has moved in. More imaginative souls hope that it is some ferocious, bearskin-wearing wild man.
Whoa.
All right.
It's a good note to end on.
Go make some history. We'll catch you next week. Thanks for listening.
Thank you for joining us for an adventure in history. An Adventure in History is created and produced by the Clatsop County Historical Society and brought to you by KMUN.